Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into today's episode of the Top Cut Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. My name is Sunny. I am your host, and I'm here with my co-host. You know, I had one, but I forgot it. Giant Skyhawk, how are you doing, bud?
You know, I am good. It is very nice to be called by my own name. May I say, it is beautiful to see your smiling face.
Thank you so much.
I'm back on the podcast.
It's wonderful to be back. It really is. When we started the recording, I did not even think about actually I forgot that I was gone for a week and a half. It just didn't even register in my head, because the second I got onto the computer and started getting all the camera stuff and getting everything set up on the new setup, it was immediately right back to the good old days. It was just right back into rhythm, I never missed a beat. But so for those that are wondering where I was, I'm pretty comfortable talking about it. Basically, about a week and a half ago, before the first episode that I missed, a couple of days before that, I'm not going to say I had a mental breakdown, but that's pretty much what it was, I guess. I was stretching myself way too thin. I had a lot of different things that I do on a day-to-day basis, working full-time, wife and son, podcast, just trying to lead a normal life of also having friends and a social life on top of all of that, and just everything together, and not getting a break for months on end sometimes. Even though I haven't been going to tournaments and I haven't been playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Competitively like I want to, more or less that, compounded with some other personal things I have going on in my head, has resulted in me just basically I got to the end of my rope, and I was just I can't. I just need one less thing on my plate for a week, week and a half. So, But I took some time off essentially to prevent excessive burnout and just recharge and get adequate amounts of sleep.
Yep.
So
adequate amounts of sleep is huge, and we survived while you were gone, and we will always survive when you need to take a break. We had a couple of very kind messages come through on Patreon, as well as people reaching out through Discord and Twitter. Had people also reach out to offer assistance podcast wise or anybody else to make sure things were going okay. So very much from the bottom of our hearts, thank y'all for sticking with us, and we'll keep rocking out.
Yeah. So part of the things that I want to discuss today and address, and I meant to tell Skyhawk that I wanted to talk about this in advance, and I forgot.
I'm about to be blindsided. Hit me with it.
Yeah, you are, actually, because I didn't discuss this with you at all, which is out of the norm. We will be I've been doing a lot of like soul searching and a lot of thinking. Just to be quite honest, the ridiculous schedule that we keep and the like ridiculous amount of work that we put into this is one of the reasons that Caleb got burnt out, right? It's one of the reasons that Caleb's not here anymore. And I feel like I'm partially to blame for that. I don't know that I am. I've talked to Caleb pretty extensively about this, and you know, there was a lot more to it than just we upload a lot and we're very busy. But there was a lot more to it than that. But you know, I can't help but feel a little bit, you know, I cannot help myself but to feel at least partially to blame because of the schedule that when I came up with the concept for the podcast, that this schedule was the concept. This schedule was a big part of it because for what I wanted when I conceptualized the podcast, what I wanted was regular uploads because that's something that no other podcast had. So I didn't want to miss uploads. I didn't want to take, you know, time off and things like that. And then when it was just the two of us, you know, it's very hard to maintain that schedule because basically if either one of us misses, then you miss episodes. And missing episodes was like a big fear of mine. But when it was just me and Caleb, it was hard for us to miss an episode without, like, it was hard for one of us to individually miss the episode without the episode just being gone altogether. So, because we were recording in person. But now that we're recording remote with me and Skyhawk, it makes it a little bit easier if one of us needs to miss because we can get a guest. Or the other thing that me and Caleb always wanted to do but never really seriously considered was having a third host of the podcast. So we, now that, again, now that we're remote, that's something we can really consider and really try to potentially work towards is having a third person be a regular host with us. Some of my favorite podcasts are done with three people on the regular. I think that it works well from a standpoint of, okay, well, you know, we have lots of good discussions. We have lots of things that we want to talk about, and having that to bounce things off of, you know, I might say one thing, Skyhawk might disagree with me, but having a third person to bounce things off of, I think is a good idea. So while we don't have a set in stone person that we think is going to be like the guarantee, this is our third person, they will be here every episode, we have a couple of people that we've talked to and we want to kind of test the waters a little bit. So in the coming weeks and the coming months, you might see us have people on for several episodes at a time. What we're currently doing is we are testing schedules out and testing things out for a potential third person to be a regular every episode person. I don't want to go into names. I don't want to go into particular details on any of that yet because we don't have any particular things finalized with people. But I do want people to understand that that is in the works.
Keep your eyes
peeled. And a big part, I would say the biggest part of us adding a third person is to take the pressure off because Caleb got burnout. I got burnout, essentially. I've had burnout before and I just kept working. And this time it was bad enough to where more or less it caused a breakdown. And I don't want that to happen again to myself. I don't want that to happen to you, Skyhawk. And I don't want that to happen to whoever the third person is. So part of this is by adding a third person, we give ourselves the ability to take a week or 2 weeks off and the podcast not lose a step. And part of it is just you get better content. So, you know, I hope that this is something that the listeners like and understand, because I think that it does nothing but make the podcast better, more consistent, and gives us a chance to take mental health breaks when we need it. And it is something that is very necessary. So, you know, yeah. Tell me what you think.
I think that all makes wonderful sense. Like, share the workload is good, but also there's no downside to having more ideas. I think some of our best episodes are when we have a third person to talk to anyway. So I have I have no objections. If you have any feedback as listeners over through that process, message us, leave a comment, post on the Patreon whenever I post the early episodes. Leave us a little chat in the Discord with the suggestions. Definitely the goal is to make it as good for everybody listening as it can possibly be. So that's where everything comes from ultimately.
Yeah. And in the Discord, we have places specifically for podcast discussion, as well as suggestions for the podcast, as well as mailbag questions, ruling questions, dual rooms, a marketplace, so be sure to join the Discord. How far in are we? How many minutes are we in? Do you know?
I can find out for you.
Yeah. Let me know how far I went into this episode before thanking our sponsors.
We're just about at 10 minutes. So if you wanted to thank some sponsors, now would be the time.
Yeah. So of course, now that we're 10 minutes in, I do want to take just a moment to thank all of our wonderful sponsors. So of course, a huge thank you to Tier Zero Games, who I believe still has their Rarity Collection pre-sales up. So if you want to go ahead and try to get your stuff for the Rarity Collection, and I believe also they might even still be doing their big blowout sale, potentially.
It's still on.
It's still on as of Sunday night, but yeah, when this episode goes up on Tuesday, you should still go look and see. And our discount code TOPCUT5 stacks on top of the discounts for the big blowout sale. And yeah, so that, and you can get your Rarity Collection pre-orders. It's big.
I did not pull the trigger. I was really heavily debating. There's a pretty inexpensive Portuguese Starlight Rare of the Evil Eye Link 3. So, I thought it would be funny. I decided against it, but there are a few cards that you probably will never be able to get as cheap again. So at least take a look.
Also, free international shipping on orders over £50. You can convert that to whatever currency you're in. US is like 65 US dollars, but free international shipping. So be sure to check them out. Again, Tier Zero Games, our code is TOPCUT5. We also have a link down below, but be sure to type in that code TOPCUT5 at checkout. Also, be sure to check us out at Gem Accessories. TOPCUT Podcast 10, I believe, is the discount code there for 10% off. And of course, Grimoire Accessories, that is TOPCUT5 for 5% off again. Yep, Skyhop's holding the mat up there. It's wonderful, beautiful. They still actually have some of those colored mats available with the numbering on the back. So if you want your etched and numbered Grimoire TCG mat, they still have some of those available. Of course, thank you, of course, to all of our patrons and, of course, Steel Fox and ETB Games. I think if I say, of course, one more time, somebody's going to come through and attack me. What is that? Oh, Dragon Shield. Also, yes. Skyhawk, you're gonna have to explain this one because this happened while I was on break. I don't know what is going on with Dragon Shield.
Mostly it's a little bit different now. So there is still an affiliate link, and you can click that link in the description, and that helps support us too. But we do now have a discount code TOPCUT5, and that is 5% off your order for Dragon Shield. So if you need some of those matte clear oversleeves, which is what I am now using to double sleeve, definitely go and check that out.
Yeah, notably, if you want to oversleeve with the clear Dragon Shields, do not get the Japanese sized clear oversleeves. Those are actually, they fit, but they are kind of snug for my taste. And I will say, if you're using like an official OCG sleeve or like the official Yu-Gi-Oh! Nationals sleeves, they are, and I'm not kidding, like 1 millimeter wider than a regular sleeve and like 1 millimeter taller.
Perchance these,
yeah, like those Master sleeves Kyle's holding up. If you're using official Yu-Gi-Oh! Like actual product sleeves, I would definitely get magic clear magic size sleeves for oversleeves, because really they are too snug and I don't want to damage my nice sleeves. So something to consider. But I think that's everything. I think we talked about all the important podcast updates as well as the sponsors. Skyhawk, I've been gone for a week and a half. Did I miss anything? Is there anything you want to add, whether that be about sponsors or about the actual podcast changes we may or may not have coming, but we're probably having coming? Actually, they're starting in 2 weeks. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, I think you have covered everything.
It's not 2 weeks. It's a week. Oh, goodness.
No, I think you have covered everything.
Okay. Our first episode with a potential third host is not this Friday, but next Friday. So be on the lookout.
Woo.
Skyhawk's room. Okay, so catch me up. What did you talk about on the last episode? Because there's some things that are happening in the game that I do want to discuss before we get into the main topic, which is the rulings thing that I'm sure you saw in the title and thumbnail. But catch me up. What's going on?
The translation of this is Sunny being like, I was sorting cards for a week and I don't know what happened in Yu-Gi-Oh! Please help me. Do not worry. I am here to assist.
I know that Rescue Ace won YCS Indianapolis, got first and second place.
Yes.
I know Triff got top four with Monadium.
So not only did Rescue Ace win, it was clearly the most dominant deck in Top Cut. I believe it was like 30-ish percent of Top 32. Might have been a little bit more than that. And all of them playing the Snake Eye engine. Anywhere between 1 to 3. And there were 3 different kind of builds that are happening. Well, really there are 4. but the one that won was doing the the regular stuff, just the SP Baron. There's SP Baron, there's lists doing playing a small Infernoble package with Ricardetto. And then there's the Jet Synchron builds, which are ending on Baron Savage on top of the Rescue Ace back row. And then there's the Ibley lock ones, which does what it does. Yay.
Yeah.
In terms of other meta developments, there was actually a YCS this weekend.
San Jose, right?
Not San Jose.
No,
I believe it was Sao Paulo.
No, it wasn't Sao Paulo.
That was the team YCS.
Bolivia. San Juan.
Yeah. No. It was in Bolivia. You're right about that. I believe it was 257 players, and it was won by Makanko. Makanko won this YCS. In terms of meta developments, just on like a grand scale, Unchained is still very good.
Santa Cruz.
Unchained is still very good, but it has fallen off some. It has a very bad tier limits matchup. And the Diabelle Star engine now makes the Unchained matchup not as bad for Rescue Ace. And specifically, Rescue Ace has a good matchup against like a very wide chunk of the field and only very few bad matchups, which I think is why it did well at the first post-Agov event. Tier limits heavily underperformed. I think everybody was very prepared for tier, and so it didn't do as much. Otherwise, it's a very diverse metagame. Sun Avalon, Rikka top, Fluanderese topped, Labyrinth had a top, although it's mostly fallen off due to a bad tier and Rescue Ace matchup. And then Pearly, also second most tops at 3. Monadium, again, is present. There were, I think, 3 Monadium players that topped. A Tri-Brigade Sprite deck topped. And probably the most wild thing that happened at that event was Runic Stun. Top 32. I told you about this already. You are aware of the scrubbed raid buyout.
Yeah, I tried putting mine up for sale, but nobody's bought it yet.
I think maybe people have decided that they don't actually want to play Runic Stun. That's honestly about it in terms of news for the game Yu-Gi-Oh! There's been a lot of discourse, although you've been active. You've still been around on Twitter, so you've seen most of the discourse around the price of the game. We talked a bit about that. And the last
bit, I listened to the Jeff Jones podcast, and I gotta say, I'm in hot take land with that.
I am halfway through that. I have more I need to listen to, so I'm gonna finish it before I do any discussions. But that I would love to talk to you about that sometime on or off the pod.
I'm just gonna say, Jeff Jones's take on Twitter was what he said on Twitter, in my opinion, was very, very, very not representative of his actual full take on that. I think he actually had a lot more nuance to his take than his Twitter post allowed him to be because of the limit of Twitter. But
I would like to point out he is not actually limited by that because he is a blue check. So he has as many characters as he wants.
Yeah, but there are certain things that are limited by the sheer like capabilities of text versus an actual conversation. That's why I do a podcast and not a blog. So
yeah, I have some disagreements, but we can get into that.
I also disagree with a lot of what he's saying,
but I agree that
I think there's a lot more nuance to his take than what we got off Twitter.
I completely agree with that. The last bit,
maybe I'll have to invite him on.
Not a bad idea. What's the bit? The last major thing, which you probably have kept a little bit aware of, is the Rarity Collection causing havoc in the market and also just in the community as a whole. And it's funny that it's launching at the same time as we're having a discussion about the affordability of the game. Because this is probably one of the best tools since Duel Devastator that we have had to get people playing Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yes.
And for people to catch up on staples that they have not had. Right now, pre-sales, the most expensive card at Super Rare,
everything is $3.
Like, Pot of Prosperities, I think, are going for $15. And everything else is cheaper than that. So, that is nice. And we get some of the OCG-style rarities, which is cool, although there are some differences. Although, I will say, it seems like they nailed the Collector's Rare, which was the thing that I think people were hoping they would get right. I have heard mixed opinions about the ultis. It seems some people really like them and some people don't. I think the unpopular take is that Plat Secret looks really good, but I'm actually very excited for Plat Secret. And
I saw the creator openings, and I think that the Platinum Secret Rare looks amazing. I thought that it was going to look fine-ish, maybe okay even, but I think it is the surprise standout of the set. The Platinum Secret Rare, like individual rarities look better or worse, fine. Like, the quarter centuries all look fine. They're quarter centuries, whatever. They're basically starlights. You know, the ultis, I don't think, look that good. The collectors obviously look amazing. But the platinums, nobody was expecting those to actually be appealing. Those look amazing.
I personally love that. Because the old Platinum Secrets, which I talked about with Jaffet on the last episode, so this is a bit of a rehash, but the old Plat Secrets, we only had, I think, two of them ever. It was like Odd Eyes, Pendulum Dragon, and Bujinte Susanoo.
No, that's wrong.
Bujinte Susanoo definitely has one.
Bujinte Susanoo, as well as Fire Fist Tiger King.
Oh, Brotherhood of the Fire Fist Tiger King.
Yes.
That probably does have one. Maybe there are a few more.
I'd have to there might check. Be three. Because I remember there being an Odd Eyes Pendulum Dragon one. Yeah. But I think there's... Anyway. There might be three of them.
Those cards were, like, starlight-ish. Like, the very full card foil, but it was, like, silver. And it's not, like, the right same pattern, but it's, like, the full card foil. I was expecting... Right. That's what I was expecting. What I got was that style of foiling, but only on, like, the border of the artwork and some of the foiling, and then the border of the effect text. I don't think we've had a lot to play with the border of, like, the effect text yet, and that, I think, is really cool and interesting to see. So...
Yeah, I think they really did that rarity well. I said it a second ago, but, like, I'll say it again. Like, they really knocked it out the park with that one, from what I've seen. I haven't seen them in person yet. From what I've seen, they really did a good job.
And I am mainly excited that I can now buy 6 more different printings of Fossil Dig. Thank you, Konami, for allowing me to be a deranged dinosaur collector.
Yeah. Well, now that we're 20 minutes in, you want to start the episode?
Yeah. We have now caught up on everything, so now you may have actual content to take us... I guess I'm the one that's supposed to be asking you questions for this.
Yeah, I can intro the concept and then I can lead you in. So essentially, I had a content idea because I have those again now that I'm recharged. I actually have content again, ideas again. I was going through Twitter and I saw somebody asked a ruling question on Twitter, and it kind of inspired me to say, hey, let's make a post here on Twitter and on our Discord server. If you were actually following us on Twitter and Discord, you would know about this, that this happened, and you could have asked a question, but you're not, so you didn't. But if you are following us and you did see that, then I asked on Twitter, I said, actually, hold on, let me go look at it. Let me see the exact thing that I said. Hey, all, we want to ask your we want you to ask us your ruling questions to be answered on Tuesday's episode. Bonus points if the rulings are meta-relevant. We will try to answer both answer your question as well as try to explain why it works the way it does. So I posted this to Twitter and Discord. You gave us your questions, and Skyhawk's going to read them to me. I'm going to try to answer them to the best of my ability. I'm going to get it wrong, and then Skyhawk's going to correct me and tell me the way it actually works. So
Sonny is not giving himself enough credit here. Man is a judge. He's got chops, but there might be a few things that I might know that he doesn't. And there are going to be...
I'm technically a judge that has judged things full, as high as regionals.
Exactly. And there are, full disclosure, like, I have been a head judge for multiple regionals in Edmonton. And there are things I do not know. I'm always still learning about the game and the rulings. And there are things that I still have to memorize that I should have memorized. A judge mentor of mine, there's like these really cool flashcards that help with being able to pull up conjunctions if you just lose your brain for a second, or specific problem solving card text stuff. So every judge uses every resource available to them. So I had to do some research for a few of these because the
okay, quit Dunning-Krugering affecting us. What you got?
You're Dunning-Kruger. I'm going to pull the Inigo Montoya. You keep using this word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
No, Dunning-Kruger is like the... So it's the curve where somebody that doesn't actually know a lot thinks they know a lot. And then once you get to the backside of the curve and realize that you don't know a lot, then you actually start to like climb steadily up. And
oh, okay,
you're like
got
on
it.
The backside and you're like, sorry, Actually, I don't know anything. But it's actually you know a lot more than someone who thinks they know a lot.
My dad is a big fan of saying that there are people who are living examples of the Dunning-Kruger effect. And usually it's on the other side of that scale. So I never think about the other side.
I never think about that. You don't know anything, but you actually know a lot.
I never think about the other side of that equation.
yeah.
Right.
That's fair.
All right. So
okay. So lead us in with the most deranged one first, and I'll try to figure it out.
We're doing the crazy one first.
Deranged one first, so that I can figure this out, because
this makes
I really
want to
figure this out.
Okay. So we're starting out extremely unfair. This is from Cursed Eyes.
Yeah, you know what? I changed my mind. Do it last. I can't.
Okay. Well, you got to warm up first. You got to get the...
Warm me up.
I will say, keep listening. We have an absolutely ridiculous ruling question from Cursed Eyes, the Super Quant Master. So yeah. Be
guess
ready.
Guess what? It's all Super Quant rulings, and I've never read more than one Super Quant card in my life. And I guess you can guess... I'm sure you can guess which one Super Quant card I've read, huh?
That would be Red Lair.
Yeah, you're right.
I love Monarchs. Or Assault.
Really? Because I love Infernoble.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first one, I'm going to read this exactly as it's worded, just because it's worded like a Quora, like the Google auto-suggest sure. sentence. Rescue Ace Impulse can negate Pep even if you have lower life points?
I love Yu-Gi-Oh! Players.
Yeah. What do you...
To the person on our Discord server that asked this, I really do appreciate that. Let me read it as Rescue Simples. All right, during your main phase, you can choose one effect monster your opponent controls with the highest attack, your choice of Tide, and neither player can activate that monster's effects on the field this turn. When your opponent activates a monster effect on the field, quick effect, you can strip this card from your hand face of field, special one, Rescue Monster from your deck. Okay, and Psychic Game Punisher says, while your life points are less than or equal to your opponent's, this Synchro Summon card is not affected by your opponent's activated effects. Once per turn, you can pay 1,000 and target one monster you control and one card your opponent. Okay, I don't think that one's the relevant one. Okay, so the question is, does Rescue Ace Impulse negate Psychic and Punisher? Is that right?
Yes.
Is that the question?
That is the question. If you have lower life.
Okay, I'm going to say yes, it can negate, and I'll tell you why I say that.
Okay, I'm listening.
I don't think that this effect of Impulse is actually an activated effect. So it has a condition, which is like during your main phase, but it doesn't have a semicolon, which means I don't think it actually activates, because there's no... I mean, I guess just because there's... Wait, does the full colon mean that it has... that it activates? Oh, God. Here we are. We've made it. Okay. We are doing rulings.
Are you?
Let me read Sagging and Punisher again. When your life points are less than or equal to your opponent's, Synchro Summon card is unaffected by your opponent's activated effects.
This is so funny already knowing the answer to this. I can completely understand why you are going where you're going, but you are missing, I will say, you are missing something very important. Read Impulse's effect again. I can give you a hint if you would like to be working this out.
Which impulse effect are we talking about?
We are talking about the first effect of impulse.
To negate. Okay. So we're assuming that you have less life points, or the person with Psychic and Punisher has less than or equal to life points.
Dad, listen, I put a hint on the table.
Okay, I'm saying that this is a continuous effect, so once it's resolved, it'll apply. That's what I'm going to say. So I do think Punisher gets negated. I just think that I have the reason why wrong. But intuitively, I would say it doesn't negate, which means I'm going to say it does. So.
Okay. You have your assessment of your answer correct. You are correct. Actually, you're technically wrong about both, but you're still correct about the first part. Let me explain. This is kind of a wonky one. So you are right, but you got the reason wrong. But also, there's a technicality here that is being missed. So, Rescue A's impulse does not negate the effects of Psychic and Punisher. It prevents them from being activated. Okay. So the other part of this. Is that this is an effect, this does not affect the monster. This effect affects both players. This prevents the players from activating the effect of that monster. So Psychic and Punisher being unaffected interact with Punisher. This doesn't interact with Punisher being unaffected. This is part of the reason that Rescue Ace has a very good Pearly matchup. Or at least it has a playable Pearly matchup, is because this card is a way to out Noir. You just go Impulse, declare Noir, and Noir can no longer activate its effects.
Got it.
In this case, Rescue Ace Impulse. So the question, in essence, is flawed. Rescue Ace Impulse does not negate the effects of Psychic and Punisher. It prevents your opponent from activating them.
Right, but it prevents your opponent it prevents your opponent from activating them. Well, it doesn't prevent Punisher from activating itself.
Mainly, it says neither player can activate monster's effects, and that's kind of why it works the way that it does, is that it is not affecting the monster, it's affecting the player.
I'll accept that. So it can't be activated because it affects the player, not the card. That actually, I'm fine with that. That makes sense. I thought in my head maybe it's because it affects the player, because that's another reason that a thing like this can happen. Mm-hmm. But I was like, it doesn't really read like evenly, but that makes sense actually. It says neither player can activate. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, well, so the difference is like, so Infinite Impermanence negate its effects. Versus this card text is neither player, or it could be your opponent, cannot activate the effects of cards with that name. Yeah, of that card's effects. So if it specifies your opponent rather than specifying it or the card, then it applies to the player.
I'm fine with that.
That's
what do we got?
Okay, so next up, to scroll a little bit. So I'm not actually going to ask you this because it is too vague and it entirely depends on the field spell being activated. Jarrett says, and this is, can you ash a field spell that searches a card even if there are no targets for the search in the deck? It would be illegal.
Can I say something here?
Okay, yeah.
I don't think that... So you can activate the field spell, but I don't think you can activate the effect to search in the first place if it's known that there are no targets in deck to search.
Correct.
So it would be an illegal activation of that effect of the field spell. Like you can place the field spell in the field spell zone, but the field spell effect to search cannot be activated if it is known that there's no targets in deck. So in the instance that your opponent says, I want to activate this field spell, and then you say, okay, I'm going to ash the effect to search, and your opponent goes, they're looking through their deck, and they're like, they immediately grab the deck and they start looking. You're like, I'm going to ash that. And they're like, oh, okay. And they're like, oh, well, I didn't have any targets anyway. It's like, okay, well, that's an illegal activation. You can't activate it anyway.
Yep. So In that case, what happens, there would likely be, so, before we get into that, I do want to bring up one other thing, is that what you said is not always true. There are some field spells that cannot be activated at all unless you are activating the surge effect on activation. This happened in Zodiac format with set rotation, giving their opponents, I think it's Gateway to Chaos, because if you can't search a Gaia card, you can't activate it.
Sure.
So that comes up. But to the greater point, if you're at an event and that happens, the way that elite, I used to think this wrong before I started learning about being a judge. I used to think that you were like forced into like crappy activations. What happens if you, especially with the search effect, if you activate the search effect on activation, say Ash, and then you find out there's no target, you go back to the last legal game state before the illegal action occurred. So Ash Blossom goes back to the hand, as does the field spell. If it was on activation that you were activating the search effect. Other, if not, it would stay on the field. You would just go back to before the effect was activated. Notably, in a situation like this, a judge might do a quick investigation to figure out if it was intentional. Opponents who are trying to cheat could, in theory, activate it to try to fish for an Ash Blossom, say, oh, crap, I don't have targets, and then sequence their hand in a different way than they might otherwise do. And a judge would be able to make a determination based on the game state, whether, and based on a quick conversation with the players, whether that was intentional or not. The evidence would have to be pretty clear that something shady was going on for it to be anything other than a warning. But you would receive a warning for an illegal activation, and then if that were to happen again, it could get upgraded to a game loss. But so I think that question is a thing to keep in mind. But if you're going to ask these questions to a judge, you need to be more specific. State the exact cards, because it's not always black and white, like with Gateway to Chaos. Is the activation of the field spell illegal, or is it the activation of the search effect? I'll touch on this. Why do cards like There Can Be Only One prevent players from special summoning different types, even though a monster with a different type has left the field for the summon?
Answer this also.
Go for it.
Because Konami said so.
Literally true. This is one of the few times that there's been an actual document.
Because Konami said so. This is why these cards should be banned. Tikaboo and Rivalry of Warlords and Gozumatch should all be banned for that exact reason. Continue. What do we got next?
Correct. This one is from the Havre Scrapman. I should really be saying who they're from. If you activate Nibiru Chainlink 1 and a Labyrinth Furniture card, again, please be specific, but in this case, let's say Stove.
I'm going to use Chandraglare because that's the one I have pulled up.
Chandraglare will work. Discarding Nibiru for cost as Chainlink 2, does Nibiru still try to resolve as much as possible, like the Orcus Nightmare interaction?
So wait, can you give me a chain?
Chainlink 1, Nibiru. Chainlink 2, Chandraglare sending Nibiru.
It's not Chandraglare. It's Chandraglare.
Or Chandraglare. Whoops.
Don't.
I don't know why. Ooh. I want to say Liger.
No.
The furniture names jumble me up. I know that it's Stove, Chandelier, and the Clock. That's what I got in my brain.
Stovey, Torby, Chandraglare, and Kuklock. All right. So, Chainlink 1, Nibiru, Chainlink 2, Chandraglare, Chainlink 3, what?
Chainlink 3, nothing.
Okay, cool. So the way this is going to work is I activate Nibiru on my opponent's turn, trying to clear their field and do the other thing. They have no response. Chainlink 2, I activate Chandraglare, sending Chandraglare and the Nibiru that I've already activated in my hand.
Correct.
So how this is going to work is it's going to resolve backwards. Chandraglare is going to set a Labyrinth spell track from the hand or deck. And then Chainlink 1 will resolve. Nibiru will tribute all the monsters on the field. And then the token will summon to the opponent's field. And the Nibiru will stay in the graveyard. Because Nibiru will try to resolve as much as possible.
That's correct. Now, for bonus points, do you know why Nibiru will try to resolve as much as possible?
I accidentally exited out of the Nibiru tab. Give me a second to pull it back up. Because it's a conjunction thing.
Conjunction.
So you can tribute as many face-up monsters on the field as possible. And if you do, special summon this card from your hand. So, and if you do, according to the rulings doc on the Yu-Gi-Oh! blog.konami.com. They happen at the same time. So A is required for B, but not vice versa. So basically, A will happen always. If A does, then B will attempt to happen. So Nibiru will always tribute, and it'll attempt to summon. But because it has a summon from hand, it can't summon. So A happens and B tries to happen. But if B can't happen, A still happens. But if A can't happen, then Nibiru... So if no monsters get tributed, then Nibiru will not try to summon. Does that make sense?
Yep, you've got it exactly. I am going to link the conjunctions document in... I'm gonna link the blog post in the description of this video. If you are looking to level up your Yu-Gi-Oh! Ruling knowledge, it is hugely beneficial. Specifically,
it's so confusing. You just have to memorize it. Yep. It's so confusing.
Conjunctions and PCST like symbols and effect text.
They're the biggest things you can learn.
They will get you through 95% of interactions. And then the other 5% are where we get into wild stuff that these people have sent us.
Yeah.
So next up, we're going to... I gotta move my way down the lists. Okay, so this one is a little bit less specific, but I'm going to run it. So one thing I've seen go both ways: Little Knight's second effect versus Rabina or Eaglin, does the bird come back? So this is, suppose this would be activating SP Little Knight's effect, targeting itself and, say, Thluandary's Rabina. Thluandary's and Rabina, rather. And then on resolution, can you activate the bird, the Fluandery's bird, to add itself back to the hand?
Okay, so I'm guessing normal summon Fluandery's and Rabina, activate effect, chain link one, SP Little Knight, chain to banish both until the end phase, chain link two.
Also, it wouldn't necessarily be chain link two. All we are doing is activating SP Little Knight's effect, targeting a Rabina on the field and itself. That effect successfully resolves. Can Rabina activate to add itself back to the hand? On resolution.
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't. The card left the field. It got banished. And then... Wait.
So,
what effect? Because Rabina banishes itself anyway.
So, this is a fun one. I'm gonna pull.
It's got to be normal Rabina. Activate SP, and then once Rabina has been banished, can it activate on its own normal summon? That's got to be the question here, right?
No. So the question is, the SP Little Knight banish. It's not whether the Rabina can activate on the field. It's whether the Rabina can activate the effect of when it is banished, right? So
yeah, if a winged beast or normal summon monster is normal summoned to your field while this card is banished, add this card to your hand.
So Thluandary's is and Rabina is, if this face up card would leave the field, banish it instead.
Right, but SP Little Knight banishes it anyway.
Okay. I am going to look up something specific because I need to double check, but I think the answer is that it doesn't.
How would it not get banished? Both effects say to banish the card.
The explanation of this is extremely silly.
This card doesn't get banished right here.
Nothing
says otherwise than banish it. Banish it. I said banish the card. There's no way.
Hold on. So I'm pulling this up. Oh, so the question is can the Rabina come back? There has been...
What do you mean, can the Rabina
come back? So there has been some debate about this. So this is the actual question that the person is asking. I wanted to make sure that I got this right for the people at home. So the actual question is, they worded this a little badly. I activate SP Little Knight, banishing Rabina. They both get banished. During the end phase, do they both return to the field? Sorry, I had to think better about what this person was actually asking. But this question is fascinating.
Yeah, I don't see why I wouldn't.
Okay, you are incorrect.
Why wouldn't it?
So Robina is funny because even though it is going to be banished by the effect of SP, it actually banishes itself by its own unclassified effect. So the first line of text is, if this face-up card would leave the field, banish it instead. So because the SP targets the Robina, Robina, in the middle of resolving the effect, because it's again, it's an unclassified effect that doesn't activate, Robina banishes itself instead of being banished by the SP. So then in the end phase, only the SP returns to the field. This is an evil question. It's a very evil. I, if you don't believe me, I will send you a source.
That doesn't make sense, though.
No, unfortunately, this is how it works. Because the Robina's effect applies before the SP's effect does. It's so stupid. It's dumb.
Continue.
Welcome to hell. Okay, I have a rapid-fire series of questions from Benji regarding Diabelstar the Black Witch.
I have it pulled up. Go.
Does Diabelstar activate to summon, and how can you tell?
No, it does not have to summon because it says you can special summon this card from your hand. From your hand is in parentheses, meaning that it is a summon that does not start a chain. It doesn't activate.
Yeah, well, more accurately, there's no colon. There's no colon. So
also, yes, there's no colon or semicolon, yes.
Not an activated effect.
Also, you can always tell if a summon does not start a chain because it'll always say from your hand or from your graveyard. Another card you can look at as an example of this is Cyber Dragon or the Incredible Ecclesia the Virtuous. It doesn't start a chain because it says from your hand in parentheses.
Okay. You can always tell. Other question. Can you attempt to summon Diabelstar under Shifter?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. Do you need me to explain why I believe that?
Yeah, go for it. I'm just going to make sure I get
the explanation. Yeah, so you can just normal summon it. So you can attempt to summon it under Shifter. Yeah.
True. that is correct. You can do that.
But if you want a reason that you can special summon it through its first effect, it's because you don't send from hand or field to the graveyard as cost. You just do it. And so because it's not cost, you can still perform the action.
So you are incorrect. This is
so
actually,
you can't do it?
If it was an activated effect where it was like it sent for like effect, then you could, because the problem is here, because it actually can't meet the condition for its summon. Of this as the same thing.
Okay.
So like Valor, even though it's not a cost, you still can't meet the condition of a card cannot go to the graveyard, so you cannot legally summon it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep.
When you say it like that, that makes sense.
Yeah. So three.
But also you can just normal summon it.
Yeah. Can Diabelstar trigger dangers or tier limit graveyard effects?
I'll say yes, because it's no, you can't actually. You can't actually. I take it back. You can't. Because of the same reason that you just said, because it's not, you're doing it to fulfill a condition, even though it's not a cost, right?
It's a little more specific. So this question is maybe unfair. You are right for both, but the specific reasons. Diabelstar sends, so you can't trigger the dangers. The dangers are required to be discarded.
Discard.
For tier limits, they are specifically required to be sent by a card effect. And this is not a
and
card.
This is not if it's not,
it's not a card effect. It's an unclassified summoning condition.
Okay.
So
sure.
Yeah, doesn't trigger the tiers. Does, however, trigger the Ishizu cards, because cards that just have to be sent to the graveyard will trigger off of this. But if they have to be sent by a card effect, they will not be activate through Diabelstar.
Sure.
Four. Can you attempt to summon Diabelstar into a main monster zone if all five main monster zones are occupied?
I'm gonna say no. For the same reason that Tikaboo and Rivalry and Gozen don't work, because you cannot attempt to do something if it would not be a legal move before you do it.
So I actually need to double check this. I was trying to get like an exact source. I think you can, because the only card that I could think of off the top of my head that has a similar effect is Graffa. If I was to activate Graffa in Graveyard to return a Dark World while I control five monsters, that's a legal activation. So I have to think that if you are removing a card
is
from the
Graffa,
field...
Is Graffa an activated effect?
It is not. It's a summoning condition. So
if you can with Graffa, then you can here. But I would say If I was giving the ruling, I would say no, because of rivalry reason.
This is full disclosure. I actually do not know the answer to this. So if I am wrong, correct me. Graffa might not be a good comparison, but that was the only thing I could think of in the 2 minutes before the podcast started. So we will, if I get the right answer for that before I'm finished editing, I'll put it up here. And we can say Skyhawk is a dummy or Skyhawk got it. We'll keep moving. Mirren, I'm sorry, but for time reasons, we are not doing the Ice Jade question, because I do want to get to the, I do want to get to the funny one. Okay, Benji also has another good one that I want to talk about. So
there's some faster ones at the bottom. It's not that, nothing against Benji, but I want to hit the fast ones at the bottom because those feel like a question that somebody that needs answers ask, not somebody that just wanted to give us hard questions.
True.
I talked to Benji, full disclosure, before this, and he purposefully just gave us really good questions.
Okay. Do we want to start with the, Herald of the Abyss question, or just all the way at the bottom?
All the way at the very bottom, the very last.
Mine are more general
questions. My Lord of Fancy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is good. This is like game kind of like stuff.
Yeah, so I would consider this not like rulings, docs, rulings, but like tournament policy questions. Yeah.
Can you use your
which are just as much rulings questions as anything else.
Yeah. Can you use your badly damaged sleeves on tokens? I have a bunch I still love but can't use anymore.
I would say yes, because they're tokens and it's game materials, not actually like they don't get shuffled into the deck or anything like that. A token can never be a piece of unknown knowledge. They're always known. So like if a token can't be banished face down, it can't go into your hand, it can't go into your deck, because it's never an unknown, it's fine.
I'd say it should be fine. Just make sure that if it's in your deck box, it's not near. Like, make sure maybe have some token cards in between it and your other cards. You just don't want the damaged sleeve to
make sure it's in a different sleeve from your deck.
Make sure it's different, and make sure it's not, like, in a position where it could damage the other sleeves. So that would be, I guess, if it's in bad enough condition that, like, it rubbing against the sleeve is going to cause some problems, then don't. But otherwise, keep it separate from everything else, and it should be fine. But keep it in your deck box, because you can't have it anywhere else. 2. Do you have to take notes in a regional? I haven't started practicing notes in my locals, and I honestly don't even know how it looks.
No, you don't. You don't have to take notes in any capacity at any point. Nope. Just keep track of life. That's all you have to do.
Yep.
It is both players' responsibility to maintain game state.
Yep. You do not have to take notes if you don't want to. But importantly, if you are doing life, always, always, always track it on paper. If one of you is using Neuron and one of you is using paper and there's a dispute, paper always takes precedence.
Neuron is considered the same thing as paper.
Did they change that? Is Neuron the same thing as paper?
Far as I know, it is, because Neuron is an official app. But if you have like a TI-84 calculator, the person that has paper wins. Or even a calculator on your phone, the person with paper wins. I think Neuron is the only technological form that's considered the same as paper, because there's a way that you can go in and track via Neuron. The changes.
Yeah. I will have to update myself on that, because I was under the assumption it was just paper.
Don't take my word for that. Always use pen and paper. That is the god tier. It can never be disputed. Pen and paper is guaranteed. So always use that. Yep. I could be wrong about Neuron. We know that you can always use paper, and paper wins over most calculators. Yep. So,
do you have to announce how many cards you have sided going into game 2 and game 3?
No, you do not. In fact, you can take your entire side deck, shuffle it into your main deck, pull 15 cards out, and go. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You do not have to tell your opponent. You don't even have to know how many you sided yourself. Just as long as you have 15 in your side deck at the end and you had 15 at the beginning, it doesn't matter.
Yep. And so long as you're doing it in the allotted time, which is 3 minutes.
Yeah, but try to do it in like under 1 or 1.5.
Definitely.
Understand your siding patterns in advance.
Yep. Is there a correct way to announce that you are summoning a kaiju? I feel like there are ways people do it in such a way that makes the opponent think they can respond, and there's a bunch of unneeded confusion.
Yeah, here's a kaiju, idiot. No, you literally just say, I'm tributing your monster for this kaiju, and just hand them the kaiju and put the kaiju in the zone that you want it in.
Yep.
But as a general rule of thumb, there's no really like correct way. You can just say, I'm tributing X monster to summon this kaiju, and I would like it in X zone. And you tell them what zone you want in, because you decide the zone as the player summoning the kaiju.
Yeah. If you have priority as the player, just summon the monster. On resolution of a chain, You could do something like anything on resolution, but my advice would be just to wait 5 or 6 seconds, see if your opponent has any type of response or anything they'd like to activate on resolution of a chain. If they don't, just put the kaiju on the board and say, I'm tributing this monster. That would be the best way to do it.
At the end of a chain, I always like to say, all right, do you have anything in res?
Yeah.
That
you can ask anything on res or wait X amount of time. Depends on how you want to go about it. Personally, I would communicate, and generally it's better to, but there may be reasons not to.
Not policy, it's best practices. Yep. Continue.
Lastly, I know that lying is illegal and bluffing isn't, but how far can you take bluffing? Can you almost taunt? Like, even if you don't have interaction, start reading all your opponent's cards after the fifth summon and acting like you might have something. This is complicated. Specifically, okay, because it depends on the situation.
If you say continually, how many summons is that? How many summons is that? How many summons is that? And your opponent gets to five summons, and you say, oh, that's five summons, huh? And then you start getting like really egregious with it. They can actually call you, and a judge can give you an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty if you do not actually have any interactions in your hand. That is a thing that can happen. I will say that this, to me, is kind of a case-by-case basis. If you're egregiously being a jerk about it, there's a good chance at an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Yeah. Especially if you do not have any interaction. I would say there's a legitimate chance of an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty if you're being a jerk, regardless of whether or not you have interaction. But I would not, I would personally, in this situation, if I don't have any interaction, I'm bluffing in a way, I will bluff my opponent, but not like that. What I would do is, if I have no interaction, I never am going to just like set my hand down on the table and just go, yeah, go off, I don't have anything. I'll never do that. I'll be hand shuffling. I'll make sure to ask interactive questions about my opponent as they're doing their combo. So for example, let's say I'm playing against a Sword Soul player and it's game one. They don't know what I'm playing. I don't have any interaction in my hand though. They'll say normal summon Mogi, activate effect. I'll say, okay, sure. Let me see your reveal. They'll reveal. I say, okay, I have nothing in response. They say, okay, they go ahead. They say, okay, I'm going to go ahead. I'm synchro summoning Sword Soul's Grandmaster Chi Shao one, Mogi two. Any response? I look at my hand. I go, yeah, no response at this particular point. And then they'll say, okay, they'll resolve the chain. Nothing in res. Yep. Nothing in res. And then they'll keep playing. I'll kind of play. It's fine. You play at this pace. That right there, that's a good pace to play the game at, especially when you already know the intricacies of all the cards. You already kind of generally know what the deck they're playing, how the deck works. You let them play at this pace, but you also make sure that they're checking with you for responses and that you're checking with them that chain links are being resolved properly and that things are happening properly. Basically, you are maintaining game state as a player should. And that right there is enough in a lot of situations for you're not being malicious, you're not being a jerk, you're not doing anything that would slow down the game state or slow down the game, you're not doing anything egregious, you are simply maintaining game state as is expected of you. And in my opinion, that right there is as far as bluffing needs to go, because if I'm playing like that and my opponent is maintaining their engagement the entire time, I have no reason to try to go off, King, you know, like, because there's an expectation here of, oh, they are paying attention. They could have interaction. Right. So I think in that kind of a scenario, like, you just maintain an interest in the game state, even if you don't have interaction, and that puts opponents on edge and makes them cautious. Don't check out. And I think that's the best thing you can do.
My minor addition to this is, specifically, you mentioned like reading all of your opponent's cards. Very, very easy for that to devolve into slow play.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Don't do it if your opponent says, I activate infinite impermanence. Yeah, obviously, you know what that does, right? But like,
yeah, if like reading something for the first time is fine. As soon as, like, legitimately as a judge, as soon as you are reading something for the second time in a situation where you don't have any interaction, you are slow playing and you will receive a penalty for it.
Yeah.
So don't do that as an attempt to bluff Nibiru. Do that if you actually need to read a card. And if a judge is watching the match for even just a minute, it will be very clear the purpose of what you are doing. And you are not.
Sure.
And if there is a good judge in the room, you are not going to get away with it. So don't.
Yeah.
So because of time, we're going to move on to the last question, which is a doozy. So we received from Cursed Eyes on Twitter this unbelievable post that I had to take like 10 minutes to decipher, and I might still have it wrong. So good luck, Sonny. Are you ready for me to read you this?
I have it pulled up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Player A controls super quantum mech beasts, Ouroboros, which is the rank 4 green guy, Magna Liger, which is the rank 7 white guy, and then, or no, Magna Liger is the rank 5 red guy, and Lusterex, which is the rank 7 light guy. Magna Liger is the fire, who each have on it their associated super quant name as material. So they each have one material, which is green layer and white layer, except for the Magna Liger, which has two copies of red layer as material. And then the field spell, Super Quantal Mech Ship Magna Carrier, is on the field, and the quant player has summoned more than 5 times this turn. So they're in Nibiru range. Player B has a Nibiru the Primal Being in hand, a set Oasis of Dragon Souls, and a number 41 Baguska the Terribly Tired to appear in grave. Player A attempts to activate the second effect of Magna Carrier, targeting each of the 3 mentioned mech beasts on the field, in an attempt to summon out Super Quantal Mech King Great Magnus. Player B then chains Oasis of Dragon Souls, targeting Baguska as Chainlink 2. Player A does not respond, and so Player B uses Nibiru as Chainlink 3 to tribute the field. Player A then responds, using Ouroboros as Chainlink 4 to target Magna Liger and set it face down on the field. How does this ridiculous chain resolve? So the questions are, is Magnus summoned? So at Chainlink 1, is Magnus summoned? How many materials would Magnus... How many materials would Magnus have if summoned at all? What are the names of the attached materials? And would he be forced, and would the Magnus be forced into defense position by Baguska?
Okay, give me all of the relevant cards as quickly as possible.
I sent them to you. They are
actually
Super Quantal Mech Beast Ouroboros,
Magna Carrier, Magnus Nibiru, Lusterex. I have Ouroboros, Lusterex, Magna Liar. Yeah.
So I'll give you the important stuff you need to know. The main cards you need to read are the second effect of the field spell, which is Magna Carrier, and then you need to read you know what Nibiru does. Ouroboros, the important part about Ouroboros is that while it has green layer as material, it has a quick effect to book any monster. So Ouroboros' quick effect books the red Xyz face down at Chainlink 4. Then at Chainlink 3, Nibiru activates. Chainlink 2, Oasis of Dragon Souls activates to special summon Baguska. Chainlink 1, the field spell activates to attempt to summon Magnus. Really, the main thing you need to know, read, is the second effect of the field spell. That is like the key interaction here. While Sunny is reading this, I will enlighten you as to the second effect of the field spell while Sunny is reading.
Hold on. So I have Ouroboros on field. What else on field?
So Lusterex. You have Ouroboros, Lusterex. So the only cards that are on the field.
Just give me the full setup. I'm building it in Dueling Book.
Okay. So the full setup is Ouroboros with a green layer under it. Lusterex with white layer under it.
Okay. I don't have a green layer built
That's
in this
fine.
Deck.
That's
the only one I didn't put in. Okay.
Really, it doesn't matter. You could just remember the materials are there. Ouroboros, Lusterex, and the fire guy, Magna Liger. And the Super Quant field spell. The opponent
Do any of the red layers matter?
The materials don't do anything.
Anywhere. They don't matter.
No. The numbers matter, but nothing else does.
Okay.
Because one of the questions is, how many materials would Magnus have if it's summoned? This is going to be a funny one.
So Lusterex has 2 red layers underneath it?
Yes. Or not Lusterex. The Magna Liger has 2 red layers.
Okay. So I think I have the board set up correctly.
And then
I have Oasis of Dragon Souls and Nibiru on the opponent's side.
and a Baguska in their graveyard, but yes.
Ouroboros has the red layers, okay.
No, not Ouroboros. Magna Liger has the red layers.
Magna Liger?
Magna Liger is the Fire Xyz.
Okay. All right. So, on the field, I have a Magna Liger with two materials. I have the Field Spell. I have Luster X. I have Ouroboros and Great Magnus, all four of them.
Yes. Ouroboros, Magna Liger, Luster X, Field Spell is what is on your side of the field.
Ouroboros, Magna Liger, Luster X, Field Spell. So Great King Magnus is not here.
Magnus is in the extra deck.
He's still in the extra deck.
Okay. Yeah. The Field Spell's effect is attempting to activate the effect to summon the Magnus by targeting the three Xyz monsters as Chain Link 1.
Okay, player B has Nibiru. Okay, and this. Okay.
I'll spell out.
Okay, it was a red layer.
Now that
okay.
You got it. Right. Yeah. Give me the breakdown, and then I'll give you what I
player
think.
Player A attempts to activate the second effect of Magna Carry, targeting each of the three mentioned mech beasts in an attempt to summon out Great Magnus. Player B then change Oasis Dragon Tools, targeting Baguska. I didn't put Baguska in this scenario. Okay.
Yeah, Baguska's in the graveyard, yeah.
Okay, hold on. Let me just.
In the opponent's graveyard.
Okay. I have Baguska pulled up. Okay. All right. Oh my god.
It is.
Cursed Eyes, why did you do this to me? Okay. Player B then chains away to Dragon Souls, targeting Baguska. Player A does not respond, and so player B uses Nibiru's Chain Link 3 to tribute the field. Player A then responds by using Ouroboros' Chain Link 4 to target Magna Liger to set it face down. Okay, so Chain Link 4 is Ouroboros. Once per turn, you attach one Xyz material from this card, target one other face at once on the field, change it to face on defense position. This effect can be activated during the player's turn if it has green layers material, which it does. Okay. And so Chain Link 3 would be Nibiru. Wait, Magna Liger. Sure. Nibiru, I know what Nibiru does. Chain Link 2 is the Oasis of Dragon Souls. Especially when I'm in defense position, it becomes Worm. I'm in defense, okay. And Chain Link 1 is Magna Carrier. It says card from the field of the field zone to the graveyard, then target three super quants. Different names you control, special one Magnus from your extra deck, and if you do, attach it. Okay, so boom, target. Chain Link 2, Oasis, targeting Baguska. Chain Link 3, Nibiru. Chain Link 4, Ouroboros. Okay, so here's how this resolves. Chain Link 4 is Ouroboros. That's why this is stupid. Okay. All right.
You have discovered the conundrum.
Ouroboros will set Magna Liger. And then Nibiru will attempt to tribute as many as field as possible. But because Magna Liger is not face up on the field, it will not get tributed. So Ouroboros and Luster X will both get tributed. So then Oasis of Dragon Souls will summon Baguska in defense position. Well, and Nibiru will get summoned with 4,900 attack.
Mm-hmm.
And then Baguska gets summoned. On summon of Baguska, Nibiru will go to defense and get negated, I think. Because the continuous effect will apply immediately. Let me read Baguska real quick. That's the one thing I needed to do. I just assumed that I knew it, but I guess nobody ever really knows Baguska. Yeah, okay, so that'll take effect immediately because it's just a continuous effect on the field that's happening. So Baguska will be on the field in defense. And then the last thing will happen is Magna Carrier. And this is where it gets weird. Because this card was sent from field to grave and then targeted the three quants. Targeting was cost. And so you special summon Magnus. But then, so because So because you target for cost and then you resolve as much as possible. So Magnus gets summoned, but nothing gets attached because the Magna Liger's face down and it's not on field anymore, essentially. So Magnus will get summoned in defense position. So the resolving game state would be Magnus on the field in defense position with no materials. Magna Liger face down on the field with two red layers as material still, I think. Nibiru on the field in defense. Baguska on the field in defense. And then Oasis Dragon Souls will still be on the field in the back row with Baguska. Is that correct? Did I do that correctly?
I think you have 95% of it. I think there's one. Ugh. I think there's one thing that you have wrong. So I think you have almost everything right. So you're correct that
so close.
Nibiru's. So the problem is, I actually don't know if I have this right. I could not find an answer to this online, so I'm just going off of what I think is the case. So one thing is that, For Mech King Magnus, I believe it is not possible for Xyz materials to be face down. So I do not believe it is possible for a material underneath of an Xyz monster to be face down. However, this effect
that, the material will stay. I'm just going to let you know that now. A face down Xyz monster can 100% have material still.
No. A face down Xyz monster can have material. I'm saying the Xyz material itself cannot be face down, right? Xyz material is always face up and it's never face down, right?
Yeah, of course.
What I think happens here, the way that this effect is worded, attach the targeted monsters and their materials to it as material. So even though this monster, even though this monster is flipped face down, that it still has been targeted by the effect of Magna Carrier. That target is not gone. So what happens here is that the materials that are underneath the Magna Carrier get attached to the Magnus, but the Magna Carrier does not, because it cannot be attached face down. That is what I think. I think everything else you have is correct. The Baguska does apply its effect to the Magnus, because the Magnus is only going to have the two red layers. That's what I think happens here. I may be horribly wrong. I think you are correct
I think the materials move over for because if you look at Sprind, you can actually the Sprind ruling establishes
you can detach the materials from a face down Xyz
monster. Face down Xyz
monsters, we know that we know that the materials can move, but I don't believe that a Xyz material can ever be face down. So
I didn't consider that. You're actually correct. I think that you're actually right on this.
So the way that I think this breaks down is exactly that, except for that final step where so quick effect is flip face down. Nibiru resolves, tributing everything except for the face down Magna Liger. Token is summoned. Oasis of Dragon Soul summon the Baguska. Everything is changed to defense. And then the Magnus is summoned, and the two materials from the set Magna Liger are moved to it, but the Magna Liger itself is not. So the final answer, my final answer, I will lock in, and I may be horribly wrong about this. Is the Magnus summoned? Yes. How many materials would Magnus have? Two. It has the two red layers. What are the names of the attached materials? Super Quantum Red Layer and Super Quantum Red Layer. And would it be forced in defense position by Baguska? Yes. Because Magnus two materials only has the quick effect to detach material. Magnus needs to have 4+ materials to be unaffected by card effects, except for Super Quant cards. Not only that, even if Super Quantum Mech King Great Magnus had 4+ materials, it would still be under the Baguska, because the Baguska effect was applying before this hit the field. It's the same thing with Skill Drain and Geomathic Sigma.
Yes.
So that is my final answer. I'm going to post that in the comments to the Cursed Eyes, and I will post what Cursed Eyes says in the Discord, because Sunny's original version might be correct. I think the tricky thing here is that the materials get attached, but I may be horribly wrong.
I think the materials do get attached. So for what it's worth, I think I technically was incorrect. Because I said everything, but I very
you were darn close.
Said,
you were darn close.
I said Magna Liger is there with the materials on it face, but it's face down. The materials are still there. But I think you're actually right. I didn't read the last line of transfer it and all of its materials. I didn't read that last part.
It's a lot of reading. So I could be wrong about
it. And I was trying to keep it brief for the podcast because it's so much reading.
Yeah. Anyway, you want to read some patron names?
I want to go sleep. All right. So a huge thank you to, of course, Always Second. Welcome back, April Floodgate, King of Names. Zyphorus, Big Stinky, Blue Eyes' Best Copium. Ding Dongs, Hostess of the Yang Zing, Give Me That Horusi, Konami, HGH Cyber, I used to play Rogue, but then my mom got a job, John Leo, Mountain Man, Omo Spaghetti, Owen Alvarado, Pistol Place Pendulums, Silver Hope, Tiny Earthcat, Understanding and Reading are two different things, Virtually Saviors World, Welcome Hosts to the Top Cut Podcast, Floanderese and Trouble Sunny, What Do You Call a Magic Owl, Houdini, Wind Up Carriers, Infidel Meity, Aaron Garner, Alexander Chan, Asami, Ashless Chaps, Atsuyo, Simp of the Silver Castle. Oh my goodness, I hit a button and changed everything. Hold on. Okay, let me find where I was. Blackwing Silver in the Ascendant is the best Floodgate, Box Wine, Chubby Ninja, come on and get your game on. Dragon Maidenless Behavior, I'm about to Riga Glamour, Tribute for Cost, these plant nuts in your mouth. Level 4 Fire Warrior Gaming, Little Stinky, Llama Yama Cam, Sarama Maxi Pack, Neshi Elme, Red Pink, 1-4-3, Wanted, Seeker of Your Mum's Sinful Spoils, and Common Caleb W. Thank you all so much for your continued support of the podcast. And of course, until next time, thank you everybody for joining us and have a great week, everyone.
Thank you all for listening to our podcast in this little corner of the internet. Some people may describe us as a hidden gem of the seafront.
Not me.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.